It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
That microphone is not doing well. You got it?
I'm Joey Loss.
There we are. It's doing much better. Now, those of you who are loyal listeners by now have been introduced to Joey more than once. Joey and Adam are partners in Strivus Wealth Partners, and they're the sponsors of the show. So Joey's in once in a while. At this particular moment, it's because the America's favorite soccer dad is out of town. And one of these days, you're going to see the three of us all here, and boy, then that'll be quite a treat. I'm thinking of, that's going to be such an interesting show. I'm thinking of putting it on free. How's that grab you?
I think we're going to have to, yeah.
Okay, good, because it might be hard to get people to pay. Yeah. Anyway, Joey's here for today. We're in the studio. It is an absolutely glorious morning everywhere I've been today, which is basically two places. I just hope it stays this way forever and ever and ever. Yes, it's nice out. I love Florida anyway, but I particularly love it this time of year. So. Well, it is with a lighter heart that we bring to you the show today because, you know, that gigantic sound you heard about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon?
Yeah.
The collective sigh of relief from investors everywhere. We actually closed not just that day, but 4 in a row with green numbers on them.
Yeah. I know Adam didn't expect it because he typically reserves a seat for me here on the show only when the market's down. So I'm glad to be here. And
you have a point.
Adam, enjoy your time away.
It's funny. All right. Well, I'll remind everybody that the lines are open, 904-222-8255. We will have a trivia question, as usual, after the first break. And if you want to just listen to us talk about what we want to talk about, fine. But if you'd rather change the subject, it's as easy as picking up the phone, 904-222-8255. We will put you to the head of the class, assuming you're worth it, and you're all worth it. All right. Well, this week in the market, he said with a smile.
The S&P and NASDAQ have bounced back about 10% from their closing lows on April 8th. But they remain well below their long-term 200-day moving averages, which now slopes downward, a change from the nice upward trajectory we saw in 2023 and 2024. Focusing on this week, as Steve said, Monday had a 2% drop, and then the S&P posted three straight daily gains of more than 1.5%. Steve, that's something that's only happened 9 other times since 1952. And after all 9 of these three-peat 1.5% daily movements, the market was positive 1 year later. And in fact, 8 of those times, the market was up 6 months later too. Obviously, it doesn't guarantee what's going to happen this time, but it's a nice thing to see from the data when we're looking back. Overall this week, where are we? The five-day change, the NASDAQ is up 6.07%, S&P is up 4.59%, small caps are up 4.09%, and the Dow is up 2.48%. Year-to-date, that leaves us 5.71 for the Dow, negative 6.06 for the S&P, negative 7.52 for the NASDAQ, and negative 12.22 for small caps. And, you know, when I look at those numbers, I'm thinking, God, why does it feels better after this week, but it feels a lot worse than the numbers I just said for year to date. And the reason for that is because if people remember way back in mid-February, which is about a year ago now, in terms of how it feels, the market was actually up considerably year to date before the tariffs. The S&P was up 4.46% before all this started. The NASDAQ was up a whopping 5.54. The Dow was up 4.9. The Russell was up 2.3. So where are we from all-time highs? I've said a lot of numbers, but this is what we're feeling right now. S&P is down 10% from all-time highs. NASDAQ down a little over 12. The Dow's down a little over 10. And the Russell's down a little over 14. And it's kind of surprising, maybe not surprising, to see that the Russell has continued to take the biggest beating. You know, they were the least overvalued going into this whole thing. But without question, every day you look, they're the ones taking the biggest beat.
Yeah. And it actually makes no sense from a philosophical standpoint to me, because small caps are loaded with companies that make most of their revenue in America. Mm-hmm. Tariffs will not bother them one little bit. So my way of analyzing this would say, well, of course, you're going to buy the small caps. But the market isn't agreeing with Steve right now.
Yeah, and I think there's some recency bias. I think people just want to see large caps go back to what they've been doing for 10 years. You know, historically, small caps have been the gravy train of greater long-term returns. You get some extra risk for that.
Yep.
But the last 10 years, that has not been the storyline, and I think investors are already used to it. Looking at gold, gold has been on a historic run year-to-date. But this week, inverse the S&P improvement, it closed down 3.3%. Year-to-date, it's still up 24% in U.S. dollars. That percentage is slightly amplified by the fact that the dollar has weakened so far this year. If you look at the gold valuation in terms of euros, it's up about 17.3%. And it's interesting to see gold moving kind of inverse to the S&P at this point. That's not always the case, but it says that it's really a hedge against uncertainty at this point.
Yeah, well, historically, that's what they say. Mm-hmm. But lately, the last year or two, three, four, even, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I mean, you hear people say it's a hedge against inflation. I mean, in some ways, I feel like people conflate inflation with uncertainty, but they're really not the same thing.
No, absolutely not. And I understand gold more in terms of, and I know you'd agree with this, it's not so much an investment, it's a place to park your money during uncertain times.
Right.
And that means, and I've had this argument a lot of times with people too, that means to me that you want to buy and sell it. Preferably you buy it low and sell it high. And that means I don't want to hold it physically because that's commissions on both sides. But if you buy the EFTs that track gold and silver, you can sell them at an instant for no money. My version of the gold and silver story.
Yeah, I personally agree that that's the best way to buy it. But of course, people get psychological comfort from owning physical gold. Yeah. I can understand some of that, but in my opinion, it's not the best way to hold all the gold. All right, moving on to jobs. On the jobs front, week by week data continues to show that we're seeing the same relatively healthy level of jobless claims that we saw a year ago. That might differ from the headline sentiment that you see, but jobs are looking okay right now. Mm-hmm. The most recent week's data suggests we're at the low end of last year's range, actually. So that's a positive for the overall economy at this moment. Jobs are not the only indicator we use to see if we're heading towards a recession, but we typically see an acute bad trend in that when we're headed towards one. And then moving on, finally, we'll wrap this up with rates. Inflation data is up slightly from last week's view on trueflation. 1.42 versus the 1.3 we saw last week, but still well below the Fed's target of 2%. Government reports inflation a little higher at 2.4%, but I think we're in a place where we're probably going to see some rate cuts soon.
I think you're probably right. In fact, I've got an argument I'll wage after the first break about that very thing. I don't really like the way they're approaching this issue at the moment, and I'll do some explaining with that. All right, we're going to have to take a short break, and then we'll come right back and we'll wrap up the wrap-up, and I'll give you my view of the Fed. I read a very interesting thing this morning that kind of contradicts a lot of things that Adam and I say a lot. So much more to do today. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I remind everyone that lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at this trivia question. It's related to what Joey was talking about a few minutes ago. But first off, it's sponsored by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. On Tuesday, April 22nd, in other words, Tuesday just passed, the NASDAQ 100, and for those of you who would rather think of it this way, just think of the QQQ, which is the ETF for the top 100, had the unusual distinction of having all 100 stocks in the index trade up on the day. That is very unusual. How many other times has this happened since the real kickoff of the modern day QQQ, which was in 2001. So we got about 24 years of coverage. How many other times did that particular event occur where all the stocks in the index were up? All right. We want to talk a little bit more about some things in the market. You want to wrap up anything you've got? Then I got a couple of questions.
I think we left off on rates, and it sounded like you had some thoughts there.
I do. And I highlighted this in yellow and labeled it my commentary. The Fed cannot do a single thing about tariffs. And yet Powell is really screwing this one up, because he and some of the other people are telling people that tariffs can be inflationary and that he's dragging his feet on rate cuts for that reason. That's really dumb. First off, tariffs don't cause inflation. They can cause a shift in price upward one time, which will be reduced back to where it is. And that's not the definition of inflation. That's a definition of a price change temporarily, or if I might use the word, transitional or whatever. Anyway, that's not inflation. Inflation is a series of factors that take all of the underlying components and keep pushing them up, or takes an excess of demand and keeps pulling it up. There are two explanations for inflation. No matter what the Fed does, they can't make it change. They could double interest rates, and it won't help. If the tariffs go on, the prices will go up to reflect the tariffs, and if the tariffs go up, prices will come back down. Why is the Federal Reserve talking about this? They should not be. And it's causing a lot of concern in the markets. They're saying it's Trump's fault. Trump's saying it's their fault. Why don't they just get out of this one? They're supposed to do what is good for policy. If they don't understand what their policy is, then maybe it's true. Adam and I have been saying for quite some time that we thought that in our grown-up lives, Powell was the best Fed chairman we've seen. But I read a very scholarly article this morning, and I read it because it caught my eye. It said, Powell is the worst Fed chairman in history. So I had to read it, of course, because I wanted to see how I could be in such disagreement with a very smart guy who's got a PhD after his name and such. And I didn't disagree with him as much as I thought I would, strangely enough. So that's where I stand on the whole what the Fed can do thing.
I think it's likely at this point, if we don't get a rate cut in May, I think a lot of people are going to start to get upset. I think we've kind of reached that point.
And a lot of people are saying, no, it's not going to happen.
Interesting.
And it's because of this. And that's why, for the exact reason you just said, I think they'd be better off zipping it.
Yeah, I've heard some interesting theories about what's been going on. Everybody has seen Trump basically bullying Jerome Powell, which for some is amusing. For some, it's like, what's going on? And I think you saw Trump change his tone this week. The market liked that. I mean, if you want to see the market have a bad day, fire the Fed chairman. That's never a good thing for certainty.
Correct.
In the markets. And so I think just from a human element, we've reached a point where Jerome Powell, you know, if someone's telling you not what you're supposed to do and humiliating you as you do it, does the human side of you, even if you're the Fed chairman, is,
of course,
I'm not going to do it. You can't make me do it.
Well, and Trump backed off on it.
Right. And Trump backed off. But I think with the take you just gave, I agree with it. The thing I think that Jerome Powell, if I had to guess, might be suspicious of is the backside decline in price when tariffs go away. I think there's a reason to be just cautious about the idea that companies will immediately revert to the pricing that they had pre-tariff. Maybe there's going to be some slight increase just because they've had consumers buying at a higher price with the tariffs. Is there profit margin that they can keep?
Yeah, it's competition that'll bring it back down. It won't fall like a lead balloon or anything. But the competition will eventually find the price level.
So I'm not anti-cutting rates. I think we're there. But I just think if there's a reason to be cautious, that might be the storyline that's going on.
Yeah, and again, Adam and I talk about this a lot. We're both very happy with the current interest rates because we're not borrowing money in large quantities. A lot of people are, and I can, you know, they're winners and losers. In the great big scheme of things, like the national economy, the liberals say that when one person makes a dollar, somebody else has to lose it, and that's not true. The pie expands over time. That's what the economy is good at. But when you do look at things like interest rates, every change in interest rates creates winners and losers. Just depends. Neither a borrower nor a lender be, yeah, then you won't care.
Right.
But most people are one or the other. And at this point, we're doing a lot more lending in that our clients have a lot of money sitting in the money market. We've got some. And these rates are actually paying us every month in ways that we have not become accustomed to yet, because for 10 years they paid nothing.
Yeah. Well, and that 10 years was very unusual. I mean, historically, yep. rates have been where they are now or higher.
And that goes back to another thing that we've talked about endlessly, too. When the Fed has things at zero, basically, it no longer has half of its policy tools. It has the ability to raise rates, but it doesn't have the ability to lower rates anymore. The ZIRP, the zero interest rate policy, that proved to be a whole hummer, basically. But they didn't change it. And I didn't want them to go into the NERP, the negative interest rate policy. We watched Japan for 20 years fail using these policies. And if we were to emulate them, it would be absolutely ridiculous. So now, if you want to look at Japan again or still or whatever, they're raising rates and their market's booming. Mm-hmm. Zero interest rate is not a viable policy. There is a cost to using money, and there should be a corresponding reward to having money and lending it out at a profit. And with zero, it's not there.
Yeah, it's getting that low is only a way to get you out of a terrible bind. It's not a place to hang out.
Yeah, and that should go away. And it did now. Again, but back to this article, one of the bones he had to pick with Powell was saying there won't be increases. Then he got his nod for a second term, and all of a sudden, bing, 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 big ones, just like that. So he wasn't exactly truthful. And for a Fed chairman not to be truthful, it's a lot better if they don't say anything. Don't lie. That's the first rule. If you don't tell us what you're going to do, everybody's fine. But if you tell us you're going to do one thing and do another thing, everybody's not fine. And by everybody, I mean me. And let's face it, what really matters, right?
Yeah, right.
But it's true. You know, we don't want that. So I'm really sitting back after reading this article, kind of revisiting my whole thoughts on Powell and the Fed, thinking, one thing I know for sure, he gets out in May next year, not this year. He will not be rehired. That I can state that with about a 99.999% confidence. I don't know who will. The other part that I'm pretty confident of is that whoever gets a job, we won't like him or her either.
Yeah.
Fed chairman's got an awful job.
Steve, if I ever put in an application for the Fed chairman job, please
shoot me.
Yeah, don't let me do it. There's no job I want less in the world. I don't care if it paid $1 million a year. I won't want it.
You know, they used to have a mission statement on their website. They've taken it off, and it had two lines in it that were directly contradictory. Full employment, interest rates low, all this stuff. There is no person, there is no body of people in the world that could possibly live up to that mission statement.
Nope.
And I was right. I know I'm right because they took it off. So do I feel sorry for him? Not exactly, but I certainly don't envy him.
Yep.
Reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
All right, another quick point. The earnings season is still pretty young, but it's off to a fine start, probably much to a lot of people's either dismay, for some of them depends where you stand, or maybe elation if you're like us. But the earnings per share beat rate so far, 73%. The revenue beat rate is 63%. That is not bad, but the important part is in the details. The forward guidance, and I should condition this with not everybody's given guidance because a lot of people are still on the fence about whether or not they're going to get hit with tariffs. Mm-hmm. But of those who are reporting guidance, it's equal up and down. And it was thought to be very negative right now, and we're not seeing that so far. Like I said, earnings season is still pretty new, but to me, this is shaping up to what I think would be on the good news side, and I certainly can't see a pointer headed toward recession.
Yeah, I mean, that news itself is good. The one thing that's in the back of my mind is, you know, maybe that's the real economy and the hard data is a sustained hard data that we're going to see continue throughout the year. But there may also be, if we're looking at Q1 earnings, which is what we're talking about, that we saw some positivity before, you know, people pre-purchasing, kind of loading up on things before the anticipated tariffs went into play. And if that's the case, then we could end up with kind of like a Wile E. Coyote moment in the next quarter's earnings, where at some point everything just kind of slowed down dramatically.
Yeah, and playing catch up a little bit on the demand side.
Right.
So that could happen. That might not bleed into a second quarter. All right, another quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Joey Loss.
I remind everyone that the lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at this trivia question. This past Tuesday, all 100 stocks in the QQQ, or the NASDAQ 100, closed up. That's very unusual when 100 out of 100 do. How many other times has that happened since 2001, which was the first time it happened? And it's a regular old digit, and I'll give you a clue, but I won't do it on this side. I'll do it after the next break if you need one. So somebody can call and try to bracket it. All right, last week, when Adam and I were in here, we had a very interesting phone call come in. And I don't think either of us realized how interesting it was going to turn out to be when it came in, but it was regarding an inheritance and the possibility of a nursing home and all that, with a bunch of implications in it. You know the rules of the show? Somebody's on the phone, they get put right in. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen,
how are you?
Let me throw out a guess first.
Sure.
So I'll try to set you a standard or something, or beginning point.
Mm-hmm.
13.
13 is a great guess, but too high.
Okay. Well, good. We've got a start point.
Yeah, it is rare. Just prove that.
I just wanted to share something and get y'all's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Last summer during a construction job, we had to order some mezzanines from Spain, and we couldn't get them in this country.
Really?
Worked out fantastic. I mean, the company was great to work with, getting things through customs and shipping and da-da-da-da. It all worked great. This summer, we need to finish the job, and so we've got to get three times as many to finish the job. The uncertainty over the subject of tariffs is real. And I'm talking with this very, very nice lady who English is obviously her second language, and she's using a certain amount of scripts, but they're very concerned about what's going to happen with the tariffs, and they don't know, and they're trying to figure out how to make it right with customers, especially those of us coming back to them. Reading the material and going on Grok to do research, which, by the way, if you haven't used it, use Grok to search instead of Google. It's so much better.
What, spell that, please.
G-R-O-K.
Okay.
It's a product of X.
Huh.
Our friend Elon Musk's team came up with it.
Huh.
But anyway, it appears as though, yes, there has been a pause, but evidently the EU has thrown an additional tariff on that wasn't there before.
Well, that's not what they said they were honored to do.
You know, I mean, it's like, hello? What are they doing? So I'm getting, I guess my point to you is, from a consumer standpoint, the confusion is real.
Yep.
Where do you think we are in that process? Do you think we're 90 days from getting there?
I'd say we're less than that.
I can tell you what the White House's plan is today. What happens is beyond me. But they've decided that they're trying to do an 18-nation cycle that repeats, you know, of negotiations that repeats until the July 8th deadline that's currently in place. And they'll try to talk to these people over, it's like 3 weeks at a time. So they'll bring in six nations a week to talk. And they think that they can keep a pace if they have everybody there, all guns blazing, getting that done. If they're successful, obviously that's phenomenal. We'll have dozens and dozens of trade agreements by that July 8th deadline. But, you know, you got to imagine some snags will get into place. People will play hardball. It may not be as simple. But that is the plan. And, you know, if that results in another extension of a 90-day pause beginning July 8th again, you know, maybe that's the case. But creating these deadlines may be a good thing to get talks moving.
I think that's absolutely true.
And that, I'm sure there's more and more people having an experience.
Yeah, I think if Trump lands, let's say, four out of the five biggest ones right now, and the deal comes down as being pretty good, then I think the market will get rid of its jitters. The other people will say, oh, well, I guess he's right. You can make a good deal with him, and things will start to settle down real fast. But if for some reason, say, South Korea wants to play hardball or something like that, that could put a wrench in the works real fast. China already took some off. You know, they say we're not even talking, but they already took some off. One thing you know about China is whatever they say is a lie. Real simple. At least a partial truth. Yeah, at best, it's a partial truth.
And thank you for your comment about Mr. Powell. I truly believe, and this goes across all the government, but the Fed should even be held to a higher standard. Truth is the only thing that should come out of their mouth.
I absolutely agree, although I disagree with you on one little tiny point. There shouldn't ought to be a Fed. How's that?
Well, I'm game with you on that.
Right. See, I don't disagree at all. I knew that. I was just kind of trying to get it out of you.
Sure. All right, gentlemen. Well, thanks so much for the help.
Marshall,
glad I
thank
could set
you.
An upper level.
All right. Well, enjoy your beautiful day.
Take care, Marshall.
Yeah, this is nothing if not a complicated situation. But you go back to what he ran on and why he ran on. The only situation that's intolerable is the status quo. We can't send $1 trillion every year overseas to countries that do not share our best interest. We just can't do it. We've got to find a way to even that out. Now, Stephen Moore is one of my most admired economic types, and he and I disagree 180 degrees on this point. He says it makes no difference if we have these massive trade deficits with other countries because they just come back and spend their money over here again. And I say, Steve, other Steve, think what you just said. They come over here and buy us. Why do you think so many states are saying you can't buy land anymore? Because they're over here buying land with our money. That's why. Close to the military bases? No. They bought Smithfield. They control a great section of the pork production. No.
Yeah, I've come around on this myself. At first, I really did not understand why trade deficits were at the center of the tariff calculations. I still don't think it's a perfect sole method for calculation on this, but I saw a Warren Buffett video talking about the impact of trade deficits over long periods of time. And Warren Buffett's a name probably most listeners know. And he was saying, you know, it's not the same. If I can tell you, when I buy a car seat for my 14-month-old daughter, I'm not getting coupon payments from China after
nope.
I just pay them a lot of money once. And on the flip side, when they're coming in and giving their money to us, they're buying notes from us.
Yeah.
You know, they're buying our treasuries. They're buying our – that's not the same. I mean, that is – they're buying a guarantee of us giving them more money in the future. And so,
or if they buy land or if they buy companies or if they buy buildings. You know how many big buildings in this country are owned by the Chinese and what the rentals on those things are?
Yeah, it's astronomical.
It's out of control. And like I said, the only situation that's intolerable is the status quo. That means you got to do something. All right, part number two on that. It's a very complicated situation. All right, then the answer to that is yes, and that's why it involves a very complicated solution. You cannot make something like this easy. You cannot make it definitive because there's more than one party to it. That left likes to say Trump's a dictator. In many respects, it would be nice if he were. You just tell him what happened, and that's it. But that doesn't work that way. You make deals. I have, as everyone who's ever listened to me knows, I have a million old expressions, and one for everything. One of my favorites that comes to mind right now is a good business deal. You know what it is because everybody walks out of the room smiling. A good political deal, you know what that is because nobody walks out of the room smiling.
Yeah.
Totally different thing that we're looking to do here. I think what Trump's doing is absolutely necessary, and I do not think there are many people who could do it. And if it's going to break a few eggs and turn out to be an omelet, I'm okay with that. It just can't drag on forever because people are losing patience, and that's bad.
I'm okay with it as long as there's enough attention being paid to small private business who, you know, we talked about the public markets and that there's a 20% decline from the highs and a 10% bounce. That's all well and good. Mm-hmm. What we haven't talked about is private markets, small companies, ranchers, you know, people in agriculture. They've had a 35, 40% decline in their enterprise value with no bounce, you know. So there's a balance there of being aggressive, you know, not showing your next card, but also taking care of internal businesses because those are harder to rebuild.
In many respects, the timing is really bad right now for a couple things. All of this is going on in the shadow of the negotiations for the budget in the Senate and the House. And if you, other old expression, you never want to see two things made, sausage and law. If you look at what's going on in the House and in the Senate, and they're trying to come to an agreement on budgeting and the tax code, and I have never seen so much self-importance and indignation and on and on and on from our side. Oh, it's okay if we raise taxes on millionaires. No, it's not. Yeah, you know, saw an article this morning, saw a headline this morning. Trump's even saying, well, maybe that would be okay. No, it's not. If you want to control the Senate and the House, I'll tell you how not to do it. Raise taxes. Period. End of discussion. We'll be right back after our final break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we remind everyone the lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question still out there. How many prior times has the NASDAQ 100 closed with all 100 stocks up on the day, as it did this week once? And we know that 13 is too high. It is pretty rare. All right, we're moving along. You know, we talk about taxes and things like that a lot. Joey and I were talking at the break about some technical things like QBI, and most people aren't impacted by these things. But the people who are impacted are greatly impacted. The impact of what that and other things would do to small business, where about 70% of the jobs come from in this country, if our senators, particularly some Republican senators, do not understand that you cannot raise taxes on small business without crashing the economy, then we need some new Republican senators, because this is the quickest way to recession that I could possibly imagine. And when you see the arguing and bickering up there and the stupid ideas that are thrown around, everybody who owns a small business and can hear my voice better be complaining loudly, because if they get their way, if some of them get their way, it's in bad shape. This would be bad if we just had this going on. But if we've got this and tariffs at the same time, it's going to be very difficult to envision a really good conclusion to this. But it has to be. But I digress. Last week, the phone call that came in triggered, apparently, a response from a listener in the glorious state of Michigan, of all things. People listen all over creation, whether you get the app on your phone or just go to the internet on WBOB.com or whatever, or if you listen to the playbacks afterwards, which we post on our website, StravisWealth.com, you never have an excuse to miss the show, basically. But this one, something that was going on in that conversation triggered a response, and it was very nice. A glowing review and the best compliment he could pay us. He said we were honest. And I'll take that description every single day above other things.
Agreed.
But what I took away from it, other than that, was that, you know, we don't talk enough about inheritance and things like that. So I thought I'd put a few thoughts down and say, you know, there's an overwhelming statistic that never seems to change. And it's right about half of this country, lawyers included, don't have wills. The legal term is called intestate. Now, who needs a will? A lot of people say, well, I don't have anything. I don't need a will. And that's wrong. Everybody has something. It can be family. It can be whatever, digital property. It could be money in the bank. Maybe you got a couple nickels to rub together or a gold coin in your safe or something. There is no excuse whatsoever to not direct the disposition of your assets upon your death. And there are various ways to do it. One of them is, as I said, a simple will. You go to an attorney, or there's some online services. I would check them very carefully with some experts. I do not make any recommendations as to the quality of any of the online services, but they've been around a while and they advertise a lot, and it's probably not difficult to find a good recommendation for yourself.
If it's cost prohibitive to do anything else, doing one of these is definitely exactly. better than nothing. Yeah, and there are a few hundred dollars.
What if the only thing you say is, upon my death, my spouse gets everything, we have no kids? Well, you still have, well, what if you go together? That leaves a pool of money. You know who directs that if you don't? The state of your residence. Now, if I want the state of Florida to direct my assets upon my death, I'll call them and ask them to. And believe me, that phone call will never get made. In fact, I'll go to a personal example. My father died very unexpectedly in 1990, and I was still 49 years old when he died. It was pretty early. He had an appointment. He and Mom had an appointment with an attorney in a couple of weeks to draft a will, and he died intestate instead. So according to the state of Florida, he had three kids. So the three kids were directed to each get 10% of his estate, which was very small anyway. But that's not my point. It could have been 100 times that. It would have been the same. And my mom didn't have a hell of a lot of money, but she got 70%. So I talked to my brother and my sister, and I said, I'm going to send this to Mom, and you guys can if you want to. And they all said the same thing. Yeah, send it. So we did. We returned it to her, and she got the whole thing. And then about, it was probably 6, 8, 10 months later, we each got a check in the mail. She said, I learned to live with the new situation, and I don't really need it, so I'm sending it back. Cool. That was her directive. That was not the state of Florida's directive. That's my point. You got to take control. Well, if you want to do that, and you've got an amount of money that goes above, I think it's something like $85,000 in your estate, and you have a will, you will not have to go to probate. There's a de minimis amount that doesn't go to probate. But anything above that, which is almost everybody who owns a home, things like that, that does go to probate if all you have is a will. And probate is a court. They open up a public record, and it goes into the court, and the court's job is to decide what your will says. You probate the will. You don't probate the assets. And if the will says this goes here and that goes there, and the court will go out to the community and say, all right, anybody who has business in front of this court regarding the deceased, come in and file it, and you wait a while. Meanwhile, you're making, oops, my wife just called and said, I was 39, not 49. She's right. Man, where'd it go? Anyway, thanks, Mom. I appreciate it. Anyway, the probate court will collect all of the possible outstanding debts, and it'll assign you pay this and you pay this or you don't pay this and whatever. And that's okay, but it requires an attorney. It requires time. It requires a public notice. And it requires money. I don't know any attorneys that work for free except mine. Well, no. If you want to do that And most people don't want to do that. But you're dead anyway, so you could look at it that way. But just do a simple will. It is not an excuse not to have a will, but it's one way to handle it. But if you want to take care of things less publicly, less expensively, and quicker, then you could consider using a living will or and trust, I mean, a living trust. And that what a living trust is just a simple document that says, here's all my assets and here's all where I want them to go. Well, if you have retirement assets, you can actually put a piece of paper on them called the beneficiary designation. Those things can skirt right around the trust. They just go immediately upon your death, the advisor or whoever, the custodian maybe, will look at your beneficiary designation and they'll send the money just like that. Well, there's a little problem with that in that over time, people who have IRAs and so on tend to have changes in their lives. They can get divorced, remarried, kids, whatever. There's so many things that happen. And many of these people do not think about changing their beneficiary designations, but they should. And that's something that we as advisors do a lot with all of our clients. We look to make sure that those beneficiary designations stay up to date.
I have seen some horror stories
related to
divorces where people never updated the beneficiary of a life insurance policy.
And every time they'll take it to court, and the court says the same thing. The beneficiary designation rules who gets it.
It's a legal agreement.
Absolutely. And they will not change it. So you have to do that if you have financial accounts that are not retirement. There's a form called a TOD or transfer on death. It acts the same as a beneficiary requirement. You should have one of those for any of your non-retirement accounts. So you get all that put together, and most of your assets are good if you just have those. But you still want the document to control where they go. And this can be true for your real estate and your personal possessions and all that. The trust directs that stuff. Mm-hmm. You draw a trust, it means you're going to pay some money now up front, but you're of sound mind and body. You know what's going on. And over time, if things change, it's the simplest thing in the world to change a trust. You have a little attachment, addendum number 1, 2, 3, whatever. You slap it on the back and say, I changed my mind about this. Fine. You can do that for the rest of your life, knowing that when you pass away, all your stuff is A, going to the places you want it to go, B, is not going through a probate court, and C, it will not cost you any further money to do this. So you do that. The people who are inheriting the money, I don't need to tell them much. They're going to get the money. So I'm really talking to people with the assets. You are in charge of doing all this prior to your death. And we do not do this. We are not lawyers. We do not create trusts. We do not do wills and so on. But we work directly with your people to make sure that we get it right. And we are in charge of doing things like TODs and beneficiary designations for money under our management. So think about it. I know it's a horrible thing. Nobody likes to talk about their death, life insurance, having wills and trusts, all that. Nobody likes to think about it. It's just critical. And one day, you're not going to feel up to it, or people are going to tell you you aren't up to it. And that is a bad day for you. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. It's been fun. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.